It's time to awaken to your ultimate potential.
It's exciting to be joining you on our third season of the Live Greatly podcast. In case you're new to the show, I'm Crystal Bauer, a wellness expert on a mission to help you thrive personally and professionally. If you're ready to thrive, I invite you to subscribe and follow season three, because each week I'm sharing conversations with incredible individuals about life, wellness, and success. Welcome to the Live Greatly podcast.
Every gallon of water that we use has a carbon footprint.
I'm incredibly excited to have an amazing person here with us today, Gary White. Gary is the CEO and co-founder of Water.org and Water Equity, along with his co-founder, Matt Damon. These are nonprofit organizations dedicated to empowering people in the developing world to gain access to safe water and sanitation. Gary's going to share some really moving stories about different families and people that he's seen that he's been able to help with these nonprofits. He's also going to be sharing a bit about his new book, The Worth of Water. Gary and Matt Damon both wrote this book to invite us to become a part of this effort. And I'm just so excited to share this with you. We're going to be talking about reducing your carbon footprint, which you can do to try and make a powerful impact. Let's jump into it and welcome Gary to the show. Gary, thank you so much for taking some time with me today. I'm so excited to have you here.
Well, it's great to be here, Crystal. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. So to start, I want to hear the backstory about how you went down the road of starting water.org, how you ended up meeting Matt Damon, how you guys came together to do all that you're doing now in this incredible mission.
Well, for me, you know, it all started when, I was an undergrad studying engineering and really wanted to figure out how to bring social justice issues to engineering, which can be quite a bit of a challenge. But even before that, it was kind of like how I was brought up, how I was raised to look at, you know, how can you live your life for others? And, you know, there's this saying, unless a life is lived for others, it's not worth living. And that sounds kind of stark, but when you think about it, we all live our lives for others in a lot of different ways. And that's what makes life nice. And sometimes that reciprocity. So for me, it was like having that instilled in me of giving back. And then when I looked at engineering and social justice, I came across the water and sanitation crisis, which was, and still is, really, really unbelievable, frankly, that 771 million of us on this planet still don't have access to something that we take for granted. It's a problem that we solved more than 100 years ago when we figured out how to make water safe and distribute it and use it as a foundation for a healthy life. So those things really led to, you know, how can I jump into this problem? How can I look at it from an engineering perspective, but also an entrepreneurial perspective? And that's kind of where we're at right now. And the evolution of the organization from that time back in 1990, when I co-founded it through today, that'll probably be some of the topics we cover today. As to Matt, you know, he was kind of on a parallel journey. He had... And in the book, you know, we talk about this, the similar upbringings that we had, particularly from our mothers. And he kind of had that same sense of, you know, giving back and social justice instilled in him. And so he had also co-founded H2O Africa, another water organization.
Got it.
We discovered each other. I won't go into all the details, but we got introduced and it's like, okay, our missions are so aligned, you know, maybe we should join forces. And that was the genesis then of what would then become water.org.
Amazing. Okay. So did you have any experiences specifically that were really eye-opening for you? Like, did you have any travel to places where people had these struggles? Or I would love to hear if you had anything that really made this stand out to you as something you needed to do.
Yes, for sure. I think, you know, once I kind of knew I wanted to do something to respond to this problem, I created an organization when I was an undergrad in my university that would allow engineering students to travel to, you know, low-income countries and volunteer. And so as part of that program, I was in Guatemala and, you know, took a side trip to the slums there one day and saw like conditions I'd never imagined. And then also saw how people were getting their water out of these really, you know, incredibly contaminated barrels that were just placed there. And I saw this one girl just like dipping this water out, carrying it back home. She's probably only about 4 years old, you know, and just walking barefoot through these lanes that were just filled with sewage. And it just was like, that really drove it home for me that this is something that was worth investing myself and my life in. And I just kind of, you know, moved on from there, trying to look and kind of, you know, grapple with how big the problem was. And of course, you know, the engineer's instinct is to like, okay, it's about drilling wells, it's about infrastructure, it's about hardware. And so, you know, looked at creating an organization that would help, you know, with drilling wells and raising a lot of charitable dollars so that more projects could be done. But then you also begin to realize that, you know, the scale of that solution and the limitations of charity then force you to innovate and think differently. So, you know, you look yourself in the mirror and say, does the scale of the solution I'm providing match the scale of the problem? And when that answer was clearly no, it's like, okay, it's time to innovate. It's time to think about the problem differently. And that's where we kind of moved on into looking at finance and helping people, you know, at the household level, poor women get access to small loans so that they could solve their own water crisis in whatever way was best for them and their family and their local conditions. And that was really the big pivot that we made several years ago towards what we call water credit, that empowers and kind of has those loans available.
Wow. Okay. So something that I'm curious about is this idea of innovation. And when you have these really huge global problems, you know, it takes some new creative ideas to hopefully try and tap into a solution. Mm-hmm. So how did you start having these new ideas? What did you do to have these innovative ideas? I'm just curious if there were any tips you have for kind of thinking outside the box or questioning, you know, the status quo, or for kind of thinking bigger when we're trying to face these really big global problems.
Yeah, I think, you know, innovation is rooted in insight, right? I don't think that you ever develop a meaningful innovation without having some insight, probably insights maybe that someone else hasn't had that particular insight before. Mm-hmm. And for me, you know, insight is rooted in curiosity. And I think that's kind of one of my traits. You know, I think I'm a very curious person in many different ways. I'm curious and I'm curious about the world. And that led me to, you know, doing a lot of travel and being in a lot of the countries where we work now, and just observing and talking. And I think the, you know, talking particularly to women and understanding how, you know, how are they solving their water crisis? Because right now, if you think about it, when everyone woke up this morning, they got water somewhere, right? Or else they're not going to survive. And nothing else matters today to them until they get water. And so the question was, how were they getting it? How much were they paying for it, either in terms of their time and not working at a paying job, or girls being out of school because they're walking miles to collect water? Or sometimes they're paying in cash, because if they're in an urban slum and there is no like natural water source, you've got to buy your water. And what I discovered was that they were paying 10 to 15 times more for a gallon of water than if they were connected to the local water utility in many cases. What I discovered was that women were going to loan sharks and paying 125% interest to them to get a loan so that they could build a toilet. All of this was because the microfinance industry that was around wasn't lending for these types of products, if you will. They would loan for a sewing machine because you're sewing clothes and by the end of the week you have cash flow and you can repay the loan, but they weren't connecting the dots about how much it costs. You know, we talk about how expensive it is to be poor, because you can afford a dollar a day maybe to pay that water vendor for a few gallons of water, but you can't afford the $300 it might take to connect to the utility. So then you can begin capturing those savings of a much lower water bill that could be reduced sometimes by a factor of 10, 15, or 20. So you see that, you know, it could be as simple as getting someone access to a loan And that's what we were able to do. We were able to kind of nudge all of these microfinance institutions into water and sanitation lending, where they were afraid to go, by helping de-risk those loans for them to kind of serve as a financial backstop. And now you fast forward, and we, through more than 150 financial partners around the world, have done about $3.5 billion in these small loans that have helped more than 43 million people now get access to water and sanitation. And it's all because of their willingness and ability to kind of solve their own crisis. And all they need is just this access to a little capital.
Wow. That's amazing. So right now, you know, you are, you're doing a lot of really, really amazing things. What's your vision for water.org? Do you have maybe a 10-year plan, a 20-year plan, a even bigger? I'm sure you do. I'm sure you have some sort of vision, but I would love for you to share some insights around that.
For sure. For sure. I think what we've discovered, the insight, if you will, is that, you know, people living in poverty aren't necessarily a charity problem to be solved, but really a market to be served, and serve them in a way that really helps them. And when you look at that, and you look at this concept of access to capital, and you look at kind of the shortcomings of pure philanthropy, then the vision is you have to find a way to create, get to connect those capital markets to people living on a few dollars a day, right? And that's kind of what we're doing now. So we also have Water Equity, which is an asset manager, which goes to those capital markets and raises capital and provides a financial return to those investors. And then we use that capital to break that into literally millions of small loans that help these individual women get access to water and sanitation. So that's the vision. If you can create that financial plumbing that connects those global capital markets to someone being living on a few dollars a day, and everyone wins, then you start to see the vision of where we can go with this. So we're growing, you know, Water Equity. You know, we now have about $200 million of committed capital that's out there generating more people getting water, while also investors are getting a financial return. And the reason it can work is just one example of a woman that I met in the Philippines. Her name was Lina Riza. She was using one of these water vendors, right? She was paying that water vendor about $60 a month for water, you know, a couple of dollars a day. Mm-hmm. She got a loan from one of our local partners, and now she has a $5 a month loan repayment. She used that loan to get connected to the utility and do the plumbing. So she's paying $5 on that loan each month. After about 2.5 years, she'll have that repaid. And her water bill now is about $5 a month. So going from $60 to $10, that's an extra $50 in her pocket.
Wow. And if you're
living at that level of poverty, that's huge. And so basically what we're doing, she has, you know, had so much value created for her. You just kind of slice off a little bit of that, and then you can then repay investors, and they win and she wins. And so once you can set this in motion and kind of, you know, there's about, you know, $300 billion a year in terms of what we call coping costs that are tied up in this. And those coping costs are like, you know, you're not working at a job, so you're not making money. You're not healthy because you're drinking contaminated water. You have medical bills. All of these opportunity costs and coping are about $300 billion a year.
Wow.
So it's just a matter of kind of rearranging how the dollars are moving around in this big system so that they tilt more in favor of the poor and the sustainable water supplies that they need.
That's amazing and so smart. And I'm wondering what people can do. So for the listeners, what are some things that they can do to help support this cause and to give back in their own way? I'm just curious what tips or insights you have around that.
So we're always looking for ways to reach more people with this message and engaging them in different ways. And certainly, you know, one of the things that we've tried most recently is writing a book, you know,
yes,
The Worth of Water, that Matt and I co-authored. We also did the audio book and read that. And so that is, you know, our attempt to try to engage people more with the issue. And it really, you know, it is a story of our journey, but it's really channeling the stories of the women, like I was just talking about, like Lenarisa, and helping people understand, you know, it's not, you know, Matt and I going out and drilling wells. It's us trying to nudge the system, to use the wisdom and the insights of the people that we meet to kind of nudge things a little bit. And so that's what the story is really about. And the more people who can see that and experience that story, the more they'll respond. So the short answer is, you know, one of the ways people can help is by buying the book. And, you know, Matt and I are donating all of our author fees for that back to water.org. So just the purchase of the book actually helps people get water. But then I think, you know, take it to your book club, you know, recommend it there, you know, after you read your copy, pass it on. And what we want is for people to recognize that even, you know, a donation as little as $5 can bring somebody safe water for life because of the leverage of that philanthropy that we still use to expand the model around the world. We have to invest philanthropy up front to kind of set this in motion in different places, but then that leverages this capital to come in. So the philanthropy works much harder because it generates extra capital in the system. So people can, you know, provide even $5 or donation in any amount. You know, what we also look at is, you know, corporate partners as well. So another way that we help, you know, corporate partners provide philanthropy, but they also invest in some of the water equity funds. And so they invest and they get a financial return. Some of them are actually looking at, you know, using their financial returns as a donation back to us. So there's lots of ways for corporates to get involved, both with philanthropy, but also by using kind of their balance sheet to make investments in these funds that help. And it helps them too, in terms of, you know, they are better water stewards. You know, they are looking at water equity in countries where they operate. So it helps them from their perspective to meet some of these additional goals as well. So we want to have a lot of different on-ramps for individuals, corporates, and foundations to step in and help solve the crisis.
Amazing. And I would love to hear any other stories you have. If you have anything else that you'd be up for sharing about some, maybe some personal experiences that some of the people you've worked with have had in regards to what's changed when they've had access to water, some of their stories. If you have anything that comes to mind, I would love to hear it.
Well, I'll borrow one from the book itself, because it was such an amazing experience for me to see this. And it was in Uganda just a few years ago, not long before COVID hit, actually. And I was in Uganda and meeting a woman. Her name, she just went by Mama Florence, was she told us her name was. She's a grandmother. And she was had been spending, you know, a few hours each day trying to find a place to get water. And she would ride on her bicycle and try to carry water back in these jugs. And so she had taken out a loan from one of our local partners for, you know, $200 or $300, and now has a well and a water storage tank. And so with that water, she now is growing a garden, right? And some of the waste from the garden, you know, the cast off stuff, she then feeds to pigs and they eat the vegetables. And so the pigs are growing. She's selling those for extra income. And then she found out she could make bricks with the water and the clay soil that was by her house. So now she's making bricks and selling those. She took some of the bricks and built some extra rooms onto her house, so she can now rent those out, right? So
Wow. She's
gone from, you know, a grandmother on a bicycle trying to find water hours every day to kind of almost like an Airbnb, right? And this is like the potential. And I think this is what we fail to realize, because it happened so long ago for us, that water access to safe, reliable water is the foundation for all that we've done, you know, in our world. And it is still the foundation for someone in that situation, and the potential that it unleashes for her financial future, for her children and her grandchildren. It's pretty amazing that what water can do.
Wow. That's such a beautiful story. And I know you have had some, you've gotten some awards, right? For what you've done. Can you share a little bit about that? I was looking through your bio. I was like, wow. Okay. That's, you've been recognized for the work that you've been doing, which is amazing. But yeah, I would love for you just to share a little bit about some of those awards and maybe some of the experiences around that.
Well, I think one of those that I think I'm most proud of is the Skoll Award for Social Entrepreneurship. So Jeff Skoll, who's one of the creators of eBay, has invested, you know, his fortune in kind of finding, nurturing, and supporting social entrepreneurs who are really driving systems change for some of these big issues facing the planet. And so, yes, in 2009, I was fortunate enough that because of the work that I had done, but all the people at water.org over the years had done to really drive this water credit innovation. And I think that was really what sparked the Skoll Foundation to then provide us with that award. And, you know, they've supported more than 100 social entrepreneurs over more than a decade now to really go out and have that type of impact in the world. So that certainly was one. The Schwab Foundation also is a great supporter of social entrepreneurs, and we've had some support from them as well. The same Schwabs who started the World Economic Forum, you know, in Davos, where actually I'll be next month.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they had to move it from January into May because of COVID. But there's a lot that happens there with social entrepreneurs as well.
Amazing. And I would love for you to share a little bit more about the book, and then we're going to be coming to a close. So you shared a couple of the stories, and I'm going to put a link to the book. But anything else you want to share about that before we start to kind of wind down?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, again, just, you know, we wanted to find a different way to try to find new audiences. You know, Matt and I, you know, with Matt, you know, with who he is and his celebrity status, there are a lot of opportunities to do media. And, you know, we do a lot of that actually when we're at Davos or, you know, the United Nations General Assembly week in the fall, we show up there. But we hadn't taken this approach of kind of a long form piece. And so for us, it just seemed like the time was right. We felt like, you know, we have a good story to tell and to relate. And that, you know, it works, you know, what we're mm-hmm. doing. This is something that is catching fire, and we want to get the word out there for folks. So, I think, you know, read it, learn about the issue, support this either through us or any, you know, organization that's out there trying to do this. You know, climate change is threatening a lot of what we're doing right now. When you think about climate change, I think that's an important thing to realize. Most people really experience climate change through water. There's this, mm-hmm. there's a saying that I learned at COP, which is the big climate change conference. If you know, climate change is the shark, then water are the teeth. And that's exactly what it is for hundreds of millions of people who lack access right now to water. And it's going to get harder because of droughts and even because of floods. And we need to make sure that we're looking not just at carbon mitigation, but helping, you know, some of the poorest among us be more resilient to climate mm-hmm. change in the context of water. So I think those things, you know, I'm optimistic about the future in many ways, but I'm also, you know, some concern as we look at, you know, people living in poverty and how climate's going to impact them and their water supply.
Right. And that, you know, I wanted to ask you too about kind of conservation and any thoughts or suggestions you have for the person listening, like anything that people can do on their own in their own lives to try and help, you know, in whatever way they can. I mean, obviously supporting, you know, your cause and these causes are incredibly important, but anything else, I mean, that you might suggest that might make a bit of an impact?
Well, I think, you know, we in the U.S. are facing water issues ourselves. Mm-hmm. So this is a global water crisis in many ways, but it's really just, you know, thousands of local water crises, right? So there's not like a direct correlation between, you know, the water that I save here in Kansas City and, you know, someone like Lina Riza in the Philippines, you know, getting water. But certainly we can participate in those solutions locally through the things that we purchase. You know, the corporate partners that we have are trying to do better and are doing better in some of these watersheds around the world. So I think, you know, looking at those types of corporate social responsibility and kind of the ESG score, environmental, social, and governance score that's so important to corporations, see how those folks are doing with those scores in terms of purchases that you make. Conserve water, especially if you're in a water scarce area within the United States. And I think even that kind of consciousness of saving water somehow connects you in a different way to people like Mama Florence at some kind of psychic level that, okay, I can better understand her crisis because of the sacrifice I'm making by saving water possibly.
Mm-hmm. And it's, I think about it in simple ways too. Like, okay, let me remember to turn off the faucet while I'm brushing my teeth. Like those little things on a day-to-day basis that you do, does the faucet need to be running? You know, can you turn it off? Do you need to have the shower running for a while before you get in? I mean, just those little changes I think are really doable for everybody. You know,
they are, and they do make a difference because I think one of the things that isn't kind of connected in our minds is that every gallon of water that we use has a carbon footprint as well. Mm. You know, that water had to be pumped from somewhere and had to be treated and had to be distributed to your home. Water, you know, if you look at the mass of water, nothing else that you consume has the mass of the water that you consume. And, you know, it's kind of basic physics, you know, moving mass over distance takes energy. And so every gallon that you waste is basically a wasted fragment of a carbon footprint. Mm. It's not doing any good. So it is all tied together.
Wow. And I think educating our kids about this as well, and having those conversations with your children and those in your life, because I mean, what you just said, that wasn't on my radar. You know, yeah. So I think that's not something that probably a lot of people are thinking about. So education and, you know, I highly recommend getting your book so people can learn more about this. And I just really appreciate you taking some time today to share all these insights about this incredibly important cause. I'm going to be putting links in the episode details so that people can find out more about water.org, more about your book, and, you know, hopefully give back if they're able in their own way. And anything you want to add, Gary, before we go to kind of a fun wellness lightning round at the end?
No, just thank you for helping bring this to light. You know, we count on people like you to use your voice to tell the story that we're retelling from the people that we work with every day around the world.
Oh, it's absolutely my pleasure. And let's get into the wellness lightning round then. So the first question that I have for you, Gary, is what's a self-care practice that you incorporate on a regular basis?
Exercise. You know, I know it's a bit trite, but, you know, I love to run. I'm really into something called bike packing, where, you know, backpack on your mountain bike, basically. And, you know, not as often as I'd like to, but on a fairly regular basis, just meditation. And, you know, looking at that, looking at some spiritual retreats right now that I might be able to take as well.
Oh, nice. So what with the spiritual retreats, I'm just curious, are you doing any or have you done any that have been silence retreats?
I did do a short silent retreat a few years ago. It was only about 3 or 4 days, but I've been drawn back to that for sure. So I'm looking at additional silent retreats.
How was it? How was that? And I'm getting off topic here. This is not one of my wellness questions.
You know, it was a lot of things, you know, it was certainly uncomfortable at times, and your mind would kind of get a little bit bored at times, but you know, you go out and take a long walk, and I think that disrupts it a little bit. But no, at the end, it's like I didn't want it to end, right? And so I think it's something that there's just different layers to it that I think I've just scratched the surface on, frankly, and I think it's a worthwhile investment of my time to go back and do some more.
So interesting. Yeah. I'm intrigued by that. That's like an interesting thing. I don't know. I could probably do like a day, you know, I don't know. I think that would be a challenge, but I've heard some really interesting things from people who have done that. So thank you for sharing that. Okay. Second question that I have for you, this is going to be a specific one that I don't normally ask, but I'm curious for you, what is one of the most interesting places that you have visited in all of your travels? And one of, I'm sure you have many, but what comes to mind?
I think for me, it is not one place, but kind of a practice. And that is, you know, solo hiking, again, you know, a little bit of solitude. And so maybe the most interesting place is probably in Switzerland or France, where I love to go back and hike in the Alps. And so that to me is so interesting because of, you know, you can get some solitude, but you get immense beauty all around you. You get a physical struggle, you know, especially if you bite off a big day when you're, you know, climbing 5 or 6,000 feet over 12 miles.
Wow, yeah.
It kind of taxes you and exhausts you. And so it's just all these things at once. So maybe it's that kind of, you know, the interesting places to visit is that state of mind that is created by putting myself in those elements. And I think that's something that I'll be actually doing in September. I'm going to do what's called the Tour de Mont Blanc, which is a hike through Italy, France, and Switzerland, where you circumnavigate Mont Blanc, the highest peak in Europe. And that's about an 11-day hike.
Amazing. How many miles?
It's about 110 miles.
And then
you stay in huts along the way.
Okay. That was my question. Are you carrying your gear to camp?
Not a lot, because you do stay in the huts. You know, they have like dormitories with blankets and then they'll, you know, cook you a hot meal. I'm looking forward to that.
So cool. Your life is like so interesting. You're doing so many cool things. And then the last question that I have for you is, knowing what you know now, what advice would you give to yourself from 10 years ago?
Be patient, because it's going to take a lot longer than you think to have this level of impact and change. And then I think, you know, stay curious. I think is the other one that I would give, which amazing. I guess I listened to my former self somehow already.
That was great, Gary. Thank you so much. This has been so fun. I've learned a lot, and I'm sure everyone listening has had some great takeaways from this conversation. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Really appreciate it. Take care.
Thank you so much for spending time with me today. I absolutely loved sharing these insights with you. If you have a moment, I would greatly appreciate you leaving a review about what you loved about this episode. Leaving reviews helps this show gain visibility so those who can benefit from it can gain access to it. Thank you so much for your support. And until next time, this is Crystal Bauer with Live Greatly, inspiring you to awaken your ultimate potential. Now for a quick disclaimer, all of the information and views shared on the Live Greatly podcast are purely the opinions of the authors. They are not medical advice or treatment recommendations. The contents of this podcast are intended for informational and educational purposes only. Always seek the guidance of your physician or qualified health professional for any recommendations specific to you or for any questions you have regarding your specific health, your sleep patterns, changes to diet and exercise, or any medical conditions.